I'm Katie Massad, and this is Flute Unscripted. I sit down with a new artist every week and share their uncensored stories with you. You're listening to Season 2, brought to you by Flute Center of New York, the exclusive marketplace for flutes. Join us and subscribe, and please stay tuned to the end of the episode for a very special Flute Center of New York code for our podcast listeners. Althea Renee is a soul jazz flutist and recording artist that has made a living playing her music her way. And while she exudes confidence and is completely at ease performing for an audience of any size, it wasn't always that way for Althea. In her book, Becoming Chocolate Barbie, A Guide for Professional Women in the Music Business, Althea talks about the struggles of having a full-time job outside of music, specifically as deputy sheriff in Wayne County, and about the ins and outs of building a music career. She has since left her job and is an in-demand solo act touring around the world performing her show of original music. She has released numerous albums and performed some of her greatest hits right here in the Flute Center of New York. Althea sat down with me in front of a live audience to share some lessons she's learned over the years. If we can, again, welcome Althea Renee for joining us at the Flute Center.
Thank you
so much for
being here.
I'm really excited that you're here. Your performance was great, and I'm really curious to hear more about how you kind of got started in jazz. I'm not sure if everyone knows, but you were in Detroit for 10 years as the, what was your official title?
Deputy Sheriff
of Wayne County. Yes. How did that transpire?
Well, I was a single parent at the time and had gone out on the road and didn't get paid. And my mom's like, you got to do something. You got to get a real job.
Yeah.
So that's what, I had the choice. I didn't want to be a Detroit cop because, I'm not running. You run in a garage, I'm not running behind you. So I chose the sheriff's department. Mm-hmm. I thought that was the safest of the three. Mm-hmm. State police, that's kind of scary. So I did that for 10 years. And, but the whole time I still did the music on the weekends. I never had any sick time or vacation time. And I still performed. And I took all of the money from my music and invested it into myself so that I could learn how to record a CD and that whole experience. So once I did the first one, it was like, wow, this was mm-hmm. kind of fun, And now I'm 7 CDs in. And
what has that experience been like? Because you have released a CD on your own independently, right? And now you've done some with some labels. Is that a little bit different?
It's all different. So the first one was, Flute Talk, that was kind of a fluke with the MP3s. I don't know if some of you guys remember, that's kind of the first that came out. And I had all these little tracks I had put on, and so I just said, let's make it into a CD. So some of them weren't mastered, and so that's my very first one. And then the second one I actually did where I, read books and learned how you put together, how you hire producers, and the whole thing, and I spent my own money to do that. And then I got a distribution deal with the third CD through Koch. And so each experience, then I was able to learn about distribution deals and how they work, And that's where you have recorded and paid for your CD, and now you're kind of leasing it to a company that will reproduce and distribute it for you. So that's the distribution deal. Then I went on to go with a sponsor who actually, he owned a jazz club and wanted to start a label. And that was no restrictions. And that proved to be not good at all because he didn't know anything about the music business. So there were lots of bounce checks where he was nowhere around, and it just looked like I was the lame one. So that's the, you know, I learned something there. And then I got with the Trippin' and Rhythm label, and they have a lot of artists. That was the first major label deal that I had. And although it was great, was able to go to Dubai and perform twice for the Dubai Jazz Festival. As a matter of fact, that's where they offered me the deal. And, you know, and I subsequently was able to get a number one, which in the history of Billboard, there has never been a flute that has reached number one from any flutist ever. And so I was the first. And so that was really great. And I held the number one on Billboard for 10 weeks. Did it get me anything? Yes and no, you know, because the grind really never, it's just different levels.
Right.
So you think, oh, once I get here, I can relax. It's like, no, you can never relax. It's just, you know, the grind is continuous. So then, you know, with that deal, it was like now they own my masters because they were, you know, I signed with them. And now they're charging me $7-$8 per CD. Whereas if you're doing it yourself, you're paying, a dollar or less per CD? So that means $100, I'm not getting any, $700, I'm getting like 100 CDs or less. And then I go out and sell those. It just was not, it wasn't adding up. So I knew I had to go back to being independent. So for me, being independent is where it's at, especially in this day and age, because it's so easy to, you can record a CD in your home.
Right.
Right on your computer,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So why would you sign,
you know? How did you get out of that deal?
How did I get out of it?
Yeah.
After like 5 years, basically, they did the one CD, and then they were supposed to do, I was supposed to do three more, and they never did, and that's what labels will do sometimes with a lot of artists. They'll sign you, and then they won't do anything with you. And they'll promote other artists on the label, mm-hmm. You know, and you're just kind of left out. So after 5 years, I just said I wanted out.
Yeah.
And so they let me out, no problem. And during that time, I did Live in Detroit. And so I just went to Detroit. I hired a producer. Once again, I'm doing it myself, hired a producer. Found the Detroit library, main library, and just invited everybody out free of charge, like on a Wednesday night. It was one night, one take, and that's that CD, you know. And I did that to kind of rebound from the bad deal that I had signed.
Mm-hmm. So. Can we talk a little bit more about juggling your daytime job with gigging and with, you know, improving yourself, finding the success that you found? How did you balance everything at the time? Or did you feel like there wasn't really a balance and it was a struggle?
Yeah, there wasn't a balance because during that time I got married. I had two preteens at the time. And I had a sergeant, female sergeant, that was bullying me because I was in the music, and because whatever the reason, she chose to do it. But you know, like if someone came in and said, oh, wow, you're, you know, Althea, I would try to keep it separate. But as my career grew, more people would recognize me, and, you know, so she was just awful. She was awful. But I have to say it was probably the best thing that she could have done, because that actually pushed me to resign and to do the music full time. So a lot of times, you know, when you look at a bully can push you to greater things. And so I'm glad it happened, because maybe I would have stayed longer.
Were you a little nervous making that transition?
Oh, yes.
Resigning, yeah.
Oh, yes, I really was. She was trying to pressure me so much that I had gotten really stressed out, and I took a leave. I have a son who is dyslexic, so he was really struggling in school. And every time, like if I would get a call, you know, she would, there are these monitors from her office, and I was in the courts at this time, family court. And so, you know, the officer that sits out in family court. And so if she sees me get on the phone at all, she would, you know, over the loudspeaker, "Officer, come to my office." And it was just crazy, but nobody else, just me. And so it was just one of those things that, and of course I wrote that in the book because that's one of those stories that, of where you find strength in negativity. So she pushed me to leave, and that was great.
And can you talk a little bit more about the inspiration for your book?
Oh, so during my time, you know, at the county, the inmates would always say, "That's the black Barbie doll." She looked like a black Barbie doll. And she'd wear a ponytail like Barbie at the time. And so it kind of stuck, and we would laugh about it. As a matter of fact, I had been on the Apollo show and actually won the Apollo show back in the day. And so when I went in there, the inmates would say, that's the girl on the television. And they would come over and say, "Is that you?" And I'm like, how could that be me when I'm working here? Of course not. But it was me. Yeah. And so the becoming chocolate Barbie is really a metaphor for becoming confident in being a dark-skinned woman, you know, in the music business, and often throughout my life being treated a certain way. That, you know, and overcoming all of that to be able to say, "I love myself. I'm cool with everything about me. I'm cool." So if you're not cool with it, that's your problem. Mm-hmm. And so it took a long time to get there because there are always people. I don't care what it is. For me, it was being dark-skinned. For someone else, it could be weight or whatever it is that somebody decides to be negative about. So that's just, yeah. So that's what this book is all about. It talks about, like, from an interview point of view, some of the pitfalls and things that I've experienced, and how the lessons that I learned. That's the first half. And then the second half of the book really talks about the business of the music and different types of deals, 360 deals, record deals, and versus independent. And I'm not telling you to do any of it. I'm just providing information.
Do you have a specific story you can share with us about the pitfalls? Like a big major one that you think?
Yeah. Well, there are a couple. Well, there's one. Okay, so when I was first starting out, I had a band, and I had to be like 19, and I was really nervous. Nobody would hire me because I played the flute, and they would always say, "You sing?" And I would say, "No. You know, you play the sax." So, so I put together this group called Solar Funk. I know it sounds corny, and none of the guys would respect me. Like, none of the guys would learn any of the music that I gave them that I wanted to play, or I would give them the music and they say, "Why do you want to play that song?" And make you feel like, you know, or they want to tell you what, yeah, we should do this, or let's just do this because nobody learned it, and so let's just do this. And I'm thinking, no, I want to play my music, you know. So anyway, we played this show, and I think everybody was making $50 or something like that. And at the end of the night, this guy, kind of pimp kind of guy from Detroit, he owned the club, and the typical, you know, kind of pimpster that maybe has a front for something else, you know. And so we played and everything, and at the end of the night, he says, "Yeah, we didn't have a crowd, so we didn't make no money." So I said, "Well, yeah, but we played and we had a deal, you know." And and he says, "Look, I don't have any money for you. Get away from me." And I was like, "No, I'm not gonna leave." I said, "I'm not leaving until I get my money because I've got to pay my guys. They played, and you can't do that." And next thing I know, this guy puts a sawed-off shotgun in my face and tells me to get away, you know. So the guys in the band, they were like, "Come on, let's just go," you know. So then all of the guys, they were all there. So all of the guys said, "Well, you know what, just give me gas money or, you know, whatever." We saw what happened. But there was one keyboardist who said he wanted all of his money. And so I had to pay him, and I was broke at the time, just starting out, you know. And so I paid him and everything, and I was really, really depressed. I almost wanted to give up, you know. And but I continued, you know, playing and you know, continued to bring music to rehearsals. I don't want to just play anything that everybody knows. I want to play my music, you know. 5 years later, this pimp guy comes in, scars, you know. He comes into a club that I'm playing and comes over and says, "Wow, I can't believe I'm looking at you on stage 5 years later and you're still, you know, playing." He says, I'm really, really inspired and impressed. He said, and I wanted to give you, he gave me $400. 5 years later.
And Althea Renee continues to prove that she is in this business for the long haul. She is constantly on the road touring and has been featured at the Seabreeze Jazz Festival, International Dubai Jazz Festival, Austin Jazz Festival, Barbados Jazz Excursion, and Mallorca Spain Jazz and R&B Festival. She has released 7 solo albums, the latest in 2017 titled Unstoppable, and she stays true to herself through her original songs.
Have you always been writing your own charts and doing a lot of arranging? Because you do some covers, too.
Yeah, but I arrange, arrange and write.
Is that something you're always comfortable with from the beginning, or is that take
a little
time?
It is, because I write melodies. That's really my strong set. And I think I do that because I have my own perspective of how I play, and my melodies and things, you know, really reflect that. So I think it's important that I write them so that, you know, they come from me.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And you talked about the support of your husband, and today you played a song that you attributed to him. What do you think has been maybe a positive of having support from your family and maybe a drawback? Do you feel a little bit of pressure, especially when you were making a big career shift, to support your family, or like you were maybe going to let them down if things didn't pan out the way you hoped?
Yeah, well, my dad early on, at first he was really, really negative. He was positive until I said I wanted to play jazz, and then I was really baffled that he was not supportive.
Were you doing mostly classical before?
Well, I was classical, yeah. And then when I said I wanted to play jazz, he would discourage me, but not my brothers. So it took longer for me to start playing jazz because I would get nervous. He would say, you know, you don't have any soul, you don't have, you know, and stuff like that. So it was kind of like, you know, but I don't know, instead of getting hurt, I would be hurt. But like just in that instant, I would just be like, I'm going to keep going and I'm going to, you know, keep doing it. And after a while, I think it was because he felt like this business was really hard for women.
Yeah.
And it is, because, women have a hard way to go. Even now, there are only a handful of women or instrumentalists that are on the main circuit as headliners for jazz festivals. Nothing to go to a whole 3-day jazz festival and not see one woman. And if you do, she's singing. Yeah. Like, oh, we gotta sing.
Right.
You know, singing is fine, but that's not, you know, we have some fabulous female instrumentalists, you know, and why do we always have to be lumped in a group where, oh, yeah, we got this girl group, you know? Mm-hmm. No.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you get to be on so many festivals and on tour so quickly? It seems like.
No, it hasn't been
quick.
Did
it take a long time?
No, it has not been quick.
Can you tell us the realities of that transition then? Because it seems like, you know, I leave my job and then bam, I'm on tour, I'm at festivals, everything is easy peasy.
Yeah, well, when I made the move from Detroit to Houston, I had a couple of friends who are a sax player and violinist, and they were doing a lot of stuff in Texas. Whereas in Detroit, it's kind of like, it's just Detroit. When you go to Texas, there's Houston, Austin, Dallas. You know, you've got all these different places that you can play. So San Antonio.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave out where I live. So, You know, but really it's just a lot of, you know, some, like, I got on a cruise and he says, well, we'll bring you on, but not for pay. You just kind of play in the jam session. And if you impress on the jam session, this was like my very first, like, kind of big thing. Then if you impress us on that, then we'll bring you back as a headliner, one of the headliners for the next year. So that's what I did. I went on there, and that performance is on YouTube. And you talk about my whole mouth was so dry because I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And because I knew what it meant.
Everything's on the line.
You know, everything's on the line. And I, and the band, it wasn't just a normal four-piece. This was a jam session. So you had two guitars. You had the bass, two or three keyboards. The music was so loud on the stage. And my whole time I'm thinking, and the drummer kicked it off really fast, the song, really fast. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, how am I going to do this? You know, how am I going to do this? And, like, I've got to shine. And I just have them break it down. And that's a lot of times I'll have the band break it down just so I can hear. Because it's so hard to hear. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so I had to play hard. I had to play for my life. And just so happened that Candy Dolfer was, she's from Holland. And she was on the show. And so during the jam session, I came out. This was after I had played. Then I came back and we played together. And took fours and all of that. And after that, it just kind of blew up from there where, you know, some people were saying, wow, I think she burned Candy. I was like, no. So then Candy turns around. She got wind of it. And she's like, you know what? Why don't you come over to Rotterdam and play with me at the North Sea Jazz Festival?
Wow.
That's where I met Wynton Marsalis and Snoop. And Sly and NDIRE and all these people were over there. And again, I was, you know, really, really nervous. But the biggest thing is that you have to get out of being nervous. You have to put your game face on. You can be nervous, but when you hit the stage, you better play. You better bring it. And for women in jazz or, you know, in music, you have to bring it harder than the men. I'm just not gonna lie. You have to bring it hard. If you don't, you just kind of fade in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good. You don't want to be there.
Do you have any other advice for young people that maybe, or maybe someone that can't quite make that transition yet out of a full-time gig or something that they're not 100% in love with, but it's providing stability, how to pursue their career or advance it a little bit on the side? Do your hustle on the side?
Well, my first thing would be to do a single if you can't afford a CD or EP, which is like five songs. Mm-hmm. You need to have something, because nobody wants to hire you if you don't have something to reference your brand. Who are you as an artist? I remember I had an audition for Blue Note Records, mm-hmm. and the guy flew to Detroit, and I was so overdressed. I mean, I was sparkles from head to toe. And when I played, I didn't have a lot of original material, so I just kind of played cover songs and stuff. And after, I thought, well, you know, I got a good chance. Well, he came and said, you know, you sounded great. Of course, they're going to say that. But I don't know who you are as an artist. He said, who are you as an artist? And I couldn't answer that. And he says, and if I had done my research, I would have known that he already had Bobby Humphrey on his roster. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't really going to look for another flutist at that time. So, and I was really, really young and not confident. Again, mm-hmm. every time I look back on my career, everybody knew I wasn't confident. And if you're not confident, if you don't believe in you, you know, how do you expect somebody else to?
Right.
And that's not just music, though. That's anything that you do.
That's all the time we have for today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh,
it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
For an artist that is more often than not heard on a large stage or stadium, it was really a treat to hear her play in such an intimate setting. As she walks out into the audience on her last song to dance with her fans, you can tell the one-on-one connection is important to Althea. She is unapologetically herself and certainly inspired us all to find our unique voice and demand it be heard. Thank you to Althea Renee for providing the music for this episode, including Brazilian Mama and After Dark from her album Flute Talk. This has been an episode of Flute Unscripted. This podcast is sponsored by the Flute Center of New York. Visit their website at flutesforsale.com for the largest selection of new and pre-owned instruments. Use this season's promo code LISTEN for a special deal of $50 off any purchase of $4.99 or more. You can follow the Flute Center on Instagram and like them on Facebook to stay up to date on the latest events and masterclasses. Special thanks to our owner Phil Unger, the Flute Center team, and Stefan Huskoldsen for our theme music.